it is the toughest start for Johnny would be to start against the Ticats. They're not the best defense in the league, but I believe this would be the toughest start for Johnny would be against Hamilton.
Alongside Davis Sanchez, my name is James Cebulski. This is another summer-style edition of The Waggle with drama, drama, and more drama. The moment has finally arrived after what? Let's see, December, January, February, March, April, May, June, July, finally August. Sanchez, it's happening. Johnny Football is set to launch in the Great White North, buddy.
Yeah, it looks that way. They finally made the announcement. What were they supposed to do last week, guys? Were they supposed to? Some fans were upset that he didn't play in the first game. I was there. They were chanting, "Johnny, Johnny," but he'd only been there for a couple of days, and they said it was likely he would play, but they didn't, you know, commit to it. Should he have played last week for the fan, for the fans, or is that, what was your take on that? That
was interesting. I was totally okay with the Owls not playing Manziel last week. I mean, the fans were getting vocal. I mean, they were so vocal they hurt Vernon Adams Jr. feelings. We'll get into that in a moment. But I liked the call last week, simply because the desperation element that is surrounding the Alouettes organization right now. And this has been happening. Chez, we launched this podcast right before we kicked off the 2016 season. And this has been a consistent narrative around Montreal. Fair or foul, this is just where the organization has been at for, you know, for a few years now. But they finally have a guy. They brought a player in that has legitimate buzz, legitimate excitement, and some legitimate optimism, and a guy who can probably legitimately put bums in seats in Montreal. And to try to trot him out there 3 days after acquiring him, I understand the demand and the curiosity, but you know what? It's a much smarter play. Don't set a guy up to fail, because if you play that card too soon, and Chez, you can speak to this because you played 13 years of pro ball in the NFL and the CFL, but you trump that guy out too soon, and what if he has a clunker half or a clunker game? Now all of a sudden people go, ah, he sucks. Forget that. I'm not going, right?
That's exactly why I wouldn't have played him for that reason. You have a lot to lose, and you know, it's a fragile fan base right now. So if you're gonna trot out your shiny new toy, as you would say, C-ball, it's make sure that he's prepared. And I got it, but it was, you know, some people thought that it was fair that the fan base out there got a chance to see him. I would say this, you know, bring him out there for, you know, option, you know, or a little package, 3-4 plays, kind of maybe short yardage, something that he had a good hold on, which I'm sure you could have went in with those 4 plays and that he would be okay with. But I get it. But it was funny for sure. There was some peed off people. I went in the second half and sat up in the stands in the upper deck, and they were all chatting up there, and it was kind of fun just to kind of hear the whole narrative up there. And you know,
hey, we want to see it though. Oh, like, I mean, we want to see it too. Like, don't get me wrong.
Thing.
Like,
let me add to this, to your conversation. Remember all the jerseys we talked about in Hamilton? About there was some Johnny jerseys in Hamilton. There was, and quite a few. There was more. Now I don't know what this means, but there was more Johnny Manziel number 2 jerseys after him being signed by the Owls for 2 or 3 days than I saw in Hamilton when he was there for a month. No BS. There was a ton of number 2 Manziel jerseys last night, or not last night.
Are you
sure? I'm sure.
Are you sure they didn't say Sanchez on the back?
I knew that was coming. I'm telling you.
Come on. I've been waiting to talk about this with you.
There was more.
He's taking your number. Yeah,
there was more. There was more Manziel jerseys in Montreal. I guess he had been there, what, 3 days? I guess he had been 3 practices, mm-hmm. So maybe 3-4 days. There was more number 2 Manziel jerseys in the stands in Montreal at the stadium after 1 week than in Hamilton after when he was there for, you know, 2 months. So. What I saw. Interesting.
When you look, you know, well, and look, I mean, this is the star and this is the type of player that Montreal has been craving. And Tell me this, because you called Montreal home for several years. I mean, the times I went to Montreal was generally to go fire it up really late. When growing up in Ottawa, it's like, hey, you want to turn it up a notch? Let's go to Montreal. You know, baby, or we used to have baby stags in Montreal and have a really good time. But you called Montreal home. Is when I look at the way of a personality like PK Subban and the way the city embraced, you know, PK Subban in Montreal. And he backed it up with his play. But is Montreal not a city made for Johnny Manziel in a lot of ways?
I think so. I mean, he's a big personality. I think the blue collar type atmosphere, which is kind of what Steeltown represents, I don't think fits as well as the glitz and the glamour of Montreal. I think that fits more to Johnny. And that's not just the knock on Johnny or either one. It just, I think it fits. And Montreal's always, like you said, James, I spent a lot of years there and called it home for a long time. They love Montrealers, and we all do, every city does, but more, I think, in Quebec than most, they love what's theirs. And, you know, whether, you know, it's, you know, a lot of the big cities, we know the Vancouver and the Toronto, and we kind of love Montreal in there too. They love the, they love the NFL. They love the big time thing for the kind of that big city. You know, they have that big city feel that they want to be like, you know, our neighbors across. You know, everyone in Vancouver loves the Seahawks. I mean, everyone in Toronto loves the Bills. When Doug Flutie was here, they could have went and watched him here play in Toronto, but they wait till he's a star and then drive down to Buffalo to watch him. You know, they kind of miss the boat until someone else tells them that they're great. But Montreal really loves what's theirs. And I think that, you know, I think that Johnny, if he comes there and is, you know, brings that, he can walk around with there, that swagger and you know, that persona he has of being a star and his whatever he's doing, as long as he's making plays on the field. But if he does that stuff, Montrealers would love it and he'll rock versus, you know, whereas if he did that in some smaller markets, you know, I hear people talking about it, the media talking about it, and it looked down upon. Whereas in Montreal, they would celebrate it. I call it stunting. They'll celebrate him stunting. As long as he's balling, I think it'd be a great fit.
Yeah, I can't help but think that he has that potential to become a star on par, or maybe even, look, there's a lot of ifs and buts for him, and he's got to actually execute and he's got to win, and it's something he hasn't done in a number of years. But I think he has the potential to rival the popularity of even the most popular Montreal Canadian, and maybe that's a reach, but I think he's got that, he's just got that sort of charismatic element that he can bring. But hey, look, he found his way up to the CFL not because he wanted to be here initially. He's gone through some life issues, and he's done all the right things. He's been a good soldier since coming up to the CFL. He's been biding his time, Hamilton Cup bait, and here we go to this. There's so many different layers to get into this here, Chez, and let's just remind everybody that the Waggle is brought to you by Sport Clips. Be sure to check out what Davis likes to go for, and that's the Sport Clips MVP haircut experience with massaging shampoos, hot steam towels, sports on TV, football, hockey, baseball, basketball, sports. Chez, it's football season. I mean, what? We're almost at the midway point already of the CFL season, and now you've got the NFL, which is getting ready to go with preseason just around the corner. This is a perfect time to visit Sport Clips because you also got legendary haircuts. Oh, yeah, and sports. And you can also check out your own free haircut at Sport Clips by going to cfl.ca/waggle, and you can redeem a free MVP haircut for first-time customers. Find a Sport Clips near you at sportclips.ca. You look at where Manziel comes into play here, and look, here he is. He's got the opportunity. The one thing I wonder, and we've talked about this a few times through the beginning of this 2018 season, Jeremiah Masoli has played very well. And I think he, through the first 3-4 weeks of the season, he was an MOP candidate. But I always go back to that conversation with June Jones here on the Waggle months and months ago, Chez, I think he could be the greatest player to ever play here. No one can run and throw like he can, to paraphrase what June Jones said about Johnny Manziel at the time. And they turned the page on this guy. I wonder what it was, whether that's a management call or a June Jones call. I mean, June Jones ultimately has to say, hey, you know what? Okay, we're pulling the plug on this. But I do wonder, for when you are that strong in your excitement, I mean, they got a lot back. And you kind of touched on that last week, riding solo. They got a lot back, so you can certainly justify the move. But I do wonder what it was that June Jones, when they went through all that time and all that effort to bring, to do the legwork on behalf of the rest of the CFL to get Johnny Manziel up here and then to ultimately cut bait.
They didn't cut bait. They got back two all-star players, veterans, very good players. One's a national, huge. And they got, you know, two first round picks. So, I mean, it's not a cut bait. It's a, hey, we have an asset, and I feel like, you know, we feel like this asset is not going to play in the next, you know, 10 weeks, whatever it may be, 12 weeks. He's not going to play. So let's get something for him now, because they agreed going into this that after, you know, in year two, they would, if he was the backup in year two, they would find a way to get him on the field or make a move. That was something that was, I believe, understood, and so they move in that direction. That makes complete sense. It's not a, I don't think it's an indictment of Johnny, or Johnny not want to be there, or what Johnny did, or you know, the team. It's just, that's just good business.
All right, I'll buy what you say. Like I said, and like you just kind of touched on, I mean, they got a lot back, so the move makes a lot of sense, and there's no point in letting somebody hold a clipboard if you feel good enough about what Masoli has been doing through the. Through almost the first half
that's
of
a good,
this season.
That's a good indicator of how they feel about Jeremiah, which is nice for him. I don't think he deserves that.
Yeah, it's a nice vote of confidence for the guy, especially when you think of everything that he had to endure in preseason and throughout training camp and even the start of the year, where, you know, the whispers. And so here we go. But I think everybody from a CFL standpoint is happy, because for all the curiosity around Johnny Manziel, people finally get their wish, including me. Hey, I've wanted to see this guy's style and profile. The only thing I'm bummed about is that he doesn't make a trip to Vancouver now. And being here on the West Coast, the Owls came here week one, and so there's a lot of people that were curious to see what Manziel was all about. And that could have been a nice little payday from a Lions standpoint, another team that has had a hard time with attendance this year, and they don't get that sort of gate or potential little boost that Manziel could have brought. But, you know, we go this week. Who does it favor more? Manziel's obviously practiced week after week after week against the Hamilton defense, and he's the Hamilton defense has obviously seen Johnny and what he can and maybe can't do up here in the CFL. So looking ahead to Friday's matchup against the team that ultimately brought him to the CFL, is there a favor in one side or another?
Yeah. I mean, it's Johnny. The fact that, you know, this team, we scrutinized and watched everything that Johnny has done as media, and the Ticats defense, I'm certain players on that team watched the same thing very carefully, what he did every rep. And you know, the fact that they're in the film room having, you know, to watch, you know, when you're in camp, you're watching the film from Skelly and team drills, and you only play against your team, you're watching the same play over and over and over. So, I mean, they've seen the film of what Johnny does well and you know, other things that he still needs to work on. So they have a huge advantage, I think, on the other end for Johnny. I'm sure he knows some of those guys, but he had so many other things going on in regards to trying to learn a new game, a new system, you know, moving to a new country. He's not spending time worrying about, any of those guys, Leonard or Brooks or any of those young DBs, and thinking about how they play cover four or what they do in this situation. He's not worried about that at all. So they're not going to the advantage definitely goes to the Ticats defense. And, you know, also June Jones being him and Jerry, you know, obviously spending the time watching Johnny so much. I'm sure they talk about after hours about kind of, you know, what they've seen from him in his you know, maturation process as in the last 2 months. They know what he needs to work on, and I'm sure that Jerry Glanville will dial all that stuff up. So huge advantage. I think it is the toughest start for Johnny would be to start against the Ticats. They're not the best defense in the league, but I believe this would be the toughest start for Johnny would be against Hamilton.
Well, and it goes, you talk about going right into the fire. And listen, I mean, it can't be all on Manziel here. You ultimately need your playmakers around him to step up as well. And, you know, Ernest Jackson's got to get back to being E-Jack, right? I mean, it's things like that you want to see. Adarius Bowman, I mean, does he get a second lease on life? We could kind of see this coming in Winnipeg, where the carryover from 2017 seemed to creep into Winnipeg. You know, they ultimately cut bait. He goes to Montreal. He gets another lease on life there with the Alouettes. But guys got to make some plays around him. And last week, it was so frustrating to watch it, you know, just from a Montreal. Because Montreal, they had their opportunities at home against Edmonton. Do you not agree? Like, they had their opportunities, but it was dropped balls. It was brain farts time and time again. It wasn't all on Vernon Adams here, which you know, they've guys got to make plays for Johnny Manziel to also be successful here. But, you know, I mentioned Vernon Adams Jr. here, Chez. How about the quotes to the newspaper La Presse in Montreal here? So you touched on, you could hear the "we want Johnny" chants, in the upper deck. And here he says, quote, "Yes, it hurt me to hear that. I have nothing more to say or to give to the supporters of Montreal. Never again. Their behavior was very disrespectful. It was not like I was playing badly. I do not want them to ask me anything, not even a small piece of equipment." Wow.
They're not being nice to me. They were saying his name. They were saying my name. Man, stop it. Stop whining. He's not even done. You got more?
Yeah, he says, quote, it was a lack of respect and it affected me, but that's fine. In the future, I'll treat the fans as they treated me. That's all." End quote. Now, he did apologize on Tuesday. He did apologize and he did say sorry, but wow. I mean, that's strong. Here's a guy who, you know, I would say this. He's still a young guy, but he's been around. You know what I mean? Like, he played at Oregon. Here's a guy who played in front of 80,000 fans on a regular basis for 4 years in the NCAA. Chez, I mean, how you let something like that eat at you? I get it. You want to be the guy. But,
I don't
man,
get it.
Talk about a lack of maturity.
I don't get it. But, that's thin skin, and I would be – if I heard that as a GM or a teammate, that would concern me, my quarterback, worrying about things like that. That is as thin skin as possible. And to be honest, people were chanting Johnny, but I mean, the reality is that stadium was not full. The reality is at the time they were chanting it, I mean, it wasn't that many people chanting. It was like background noise. It wasn't like you had, you know, a sold out 80,000 people all chanting, and you know, you're looking down, you feel like you're an ant in the middle of the field and everyone's yelling at you. This was like background noise. Like, it wasn't that bad. The fact that he made a comment on it, but I will say that, so that would, first of all, as a teammate, as a coach, as a personnel guy on that team, I would see something there. That would definitely concern me about Vernon Adams making that comment. On another note, the fact that he did apologize, good on him. So I'll apologize for making my crybaby noises. Good on him for apologizing. That's, you know, sometimes we do things and look back on and, you know, and realize he was emotional. He, you know, he did that and you know, probably wanted to perform well, his chance to start. And I felt like it was disrespectful that they were cheering Johnny's name, because Vernon was giving a good effort, and I was there at the game. I thought Vernon gave them a chance. He missed a couple of throws, but he played pretty well. You know, his numbers didn't indicate that, but I thought he was. You want to talk about effort? He gave effort and made some plays with his legs, and he was giving it all out there. You could tell that he cared, and I witnessed it firsthand. He cared, so I understand where he's coming from. I wouldn't have ever said anything about it, but at least he apologized. So good on him for apologizing. And like I said, we all make mistakes, and so at least he's man enough to stand up and say, to admit it. So yeah, move on.
I mean, you gotta also own the good and the bad though, right? Sure. I mean, he had a horrible clock management right before halftime as well, that you know, and they're marching, you're in scoring position and you don't come away with anything. That was, I mean, it was just maddening watching some of that. But you know, look, it's a lack of maturity at a certain moment there, at a time that, hey, I get you want to win, but maybe that's a sign that, you know, yeah, BC had him, Montreal has him, Regina gets him, you know, back to Montreal, Hamilton had a run with him. Like, here's a guy who's been through, you know, five teams already, or five visits in about about 2.5 seasons. It's, you know, there's something to be said about that when you're 25 and you've kicked around the league that many times. So maybe there is something there. But Johnny Manziel will make his start Friday, people. So it's finally happening. And then next week we can overanalyze his performance. Chez, the crazy thing about this week is that I feel like at any other week, the next team to discuss would be the lead story on almost any other week in the year based on what has unfolded in the last few days. But it takes a back seat because of the Manziel news. But what's happening in Regina this past week with the Saskatchewan Rough Riders, first things first, Zach Caleros is back, and I think he's back much sooner than a lot of people expected. You know, he was supposed to be up for six games. But he's back, and not a moment too soon, it seems, with a sputtering offense with the Riders. It sounds like Daron Carter is going back to offense now as well. And then we'll get into the whole other element, with Jerome Messam here in a moment. But first things first, Chris Jones doesn't want to commit to a starter right out of the get-go. He's suggested that Caleros will play a fair amount, but that Brandon Bridge will get some playing time too. This two-headed quarterback thing, you know, it worked a little bit last year, but how about you just stick to a guy here? This is a team that this team has underachieved. Is that not fair so far this year?
You ask me and my preseason expectations, they're talented, and you know, the play of that offensive line has been disappointing. That's not something that we hear about often. The interior of that offensive line, Dan Clark, Brendan Labatt, two guys that you can always count on, you know, all-star guys, they haven't been good. They've been banged up, and that's something that's it's been evident they're struggling. They got you know, Darius Pladek in there, who's a young guy. He's doing his best, but they've they're struggling O line, which I think is really affected their pass game. Obviously, if you don't have time, you can't get down the field. You don't see those explosive plays. You know, going into the year, James, what were we talking about in the offseason was, wow, they have 6-7 receivers that are, you know, big play guys, and what are they gonna do with all these guys? And you know, what a dynamic group, and Zach Caleros is going to be, you know, rejuvenated, and oh wow, and you know, Jerome Messam, and I mean, everything's like, nothing's worked out. Zach hasn't worked out with his injury, and obviously, you know, they released, you know, Chad and
Rob Bag,
and there's another one too.
Daron Carter got thrown on defense. You know, think about Grant. That at the who would have called that? Yeah, Bakari Grant. There's another one. But like, think about that at the beginning of the season.
Remember, they made all those moves because they felt like the guys. They didn't do those moves because they wanted to get rid of these guys. They did it because they felt the guys they had were going to be better, and so that shows you how much faith they had in the guys they have. So that tells me that right there. It hasn't worked out.
It has not clicked, and let's see what Caleros can do. He gets back into the fold, and it was just a small sample size where he picked up a win in his debut and then suffered a concussion against the Ottawa Redblacks. Look, I mean, first things first, you get Caleros back. Let's see what he can ultimately do for a little bit. This is the guy you went out, you invested in, you made the move to bring him into Regina. Let's see what he can finally do here. And then conversely, let's stop the insanity. We've talked about this before. You've got an offense that is struggling. It's an offense that is one of the you know, it's an offense that should be better than what it is and what it has shown. Let's just try to look at a scenario where you can put one of the best playmakers in the Canadian Football League back in a position for him to succeed. And, you know, look, I mean, it probably, in the grand scheme of things, it's pretty impressive that Daron Carter has been able to keep his head above water for as many weeks as he has, playing a DB role that he hasn't really had much experience in. But come on. Let's, you know, that guy's making his money because he's a playmaker on offense. Get him there. Let's see what he can do and turn this Rider season around, going with the quarterback that they obviously invested in this past offseason. That's how I see things. Well,
he's going back over. Nick Marshall is now back off the sixth game.
Yeah.
Who was in week one, he played against Toronto and was lights out.
Looked good.
Oh, he was great. So, yeah. I mean, we'll see. Obviously, that's going to do it's going to change things, so you get him back over on offense and see what he can do.
You know, we got to touch on the big story as well this week in Regina, and that is the release of Jerome Messam, who was charged with voyeurism this week. This stems from an incident going back to November of 2016 when he was still a member of the Calgary Stampeders. You know, Jerome Messam's 33 now, Chez. It's unfortunate. We'll see how the legal process plays out here. It's unfortunate because this at 33, and he was already struggling this season with just 200 yards on the ground. I can't imagine seeing him in the Canadian Football League, no matter how this ultimately plays out. You know, someone taking a chance on a veteran running back at this stage. But it marks kind of a disappointing end for a guy who's had a phenomenal career in the CFL. He's a two-time Most Outstanding Canadian. Like, that's... Like it's huge, and it's unfortunate. It's, you know, obviously it's a shocking charge against a guy who has been the guy who has waved the Canadian flag proudly as the Most Outstanding Canadian in the CFL for the better part of the last decade as one of the top guys.
Yeah, I'm gonna wait to pass judgment on this. I'm with you though in everything you've said. I feel bad. I have, you know, a personal relationship with Jerome. I was with him when he was a rookie. NBC, and you know, a soft spot for Jerome. I wish the best for him, and it is disappointing because, you know what, we say this how many times. I said this, I mean, it's, you know, we all want to give people, you know, benefit of the doubt or second chances and things of this nature. So I don't know from the legal standpoint what's going on here exactly. I've read what everyone else has read. Saddens me because you're right. Regardless of what happens now, I think that'd probably be the end for Jerome. And you know, he's had a great career, and he can, you know, Jerome is a guy who's had a tough struggle. He's been, you know, bounced around, and he kind of, you know, he's just started a family and kind of a guy who's, you know, seeming to mature and figure it out. So you want that guy to, you know, to succeed and enjoy his family and you know, and be able to celebrate his career and not have something like this tarnish his career. And you know, also more importantly than that is his family. And so hopefully he can, whatever happens here, hopefully gets settled. And you know, like I say, I'll reserve judgment on this. I don't know enough to you know, comment on it, but I just, it saddens me, you know, in a lot of ways. But hope the best for Jerome and his family, and hope that I'll leave it at that.
Yeah, and look, I mean, from a player standpoint, and we kind of are in a bit of we're in a bit of a society now where you're almost guilty until proven innocent. The way we kind of react, and you see people react on social media, but you know, the league obviously acted quickly with their decision. You know, the Riders releasing him immediately, and the league basically ruling that no team is allowed to sign him at this point in time while this process plays out. But, you know, we've seen other players who have gone through scenarios, you know, even worse than this, that have found a way, you know, to bounce back in these sort of scenarios. So we will see what ultimately becomes of all of this. But I will say, you know, on a side note in all of this, you look at what we have seen over the better part of the last 10 years in the CFL with Canadian running backs, and I'll lump Jerome Messam in this as well based on what his body work was, Andrew Harris, and then even John Cornish. You know, you're talking about a golden age, I think, when we look back years from now, of three incredibly talented Canadian running backs all playing around the same time, Chez.
Yeah, those no doubt about it. They have kind of opened up the floodgates for others to follow. So you can credit those guys. Obviously, there's a lot of guys in the past who opened the doors for them. But yeah, you're right. I mean, you haven't had three guys that have had the success of Messam, Harris, and Cornish all playing at the same time. That definitely hasn't happened, and I think it shows a lot of young Canadians. You see them now, a lot of young Canadian running backs in the league now, and that's when I was coming up in my first few years, there was none. There was Jesse Lumsden, I think, was probably the only one that I could, Sean Millington a little bit, and he was kind of finishing when I was starting, but yeah, he's definitely a part of that trio of guys who were did at a high level for a long time and are Canadian.
Yeah, to see what those guys did, it's pretty remarkable. So, looking around the rest of the league, well, the Argos, they went out in the offseason and they traded for James Franklin, and it was a nice little insurance policy for Ricky Ray. Now it seems as though they need an insurance policy for James Franklin, and they are looking at McLeod Bethel Thompson, who gets the call now for the Argos game against the Ottawa Red Blacks here. James Franklin has sputtered since stepping in. And, you know, it showed a little shine when he first got in there, but it has not gone so well in the last few weeks. Six interceptions since taking over as starter, two touchdowns. The Argos offense struggling. They're averaging just over 15 points a game. Mark Trestman ultimately saying uncle here for the time being on James Franklin. What are you seeing from James Franklin that's just not clicking with the Argos offense?
Yeah, I mean, one thing that really perked my ears up was when James Franklin signed, Mark Trestman's hesitation to anoint him the heir to Ricky. Now, when you usually get – we all know we've talked about James for the last 2 years. When he became a free agent, everybody wanted him. He was the next franchise quarterback. He had everything that everybody wanted to see. But yet, when he signed with the Argos, Coach Trestman wouldn't give him that. And every question about the backup quarterback or Ricky Ray, he always was quick to say, Ricky's our starter, and don't be disrespectful. And then that's one thing to give Rick that, because he's a Hall of Famer, and Trest believes that's what he deserves. And I do as well. But he would also say, when you talk about the backup role, he'd be quick to say it's a competition between McLeod Bethel Thompson and that he's a good football player. I've talked to Coach Trestman myself several times, and he always reiterates the same thing, that McLeod Bethel Thompson is a darn good football player. He just told me, I just spoke with him yesterday, and he told me, and I asked him about that. Tell me about McLeod Bethel Thompson. And he said, this is a great young man, a good football player, and he deserves to play. So, I mean, he's held strong in what McLeod Bethel Thompson has obviously shown. This tells me, I don't know McLeod Bethel Thompson, but I guarantee you, if Tress is this strong on him, that he's showed everything in the meeting room, on the practice field. He's obviously got skills. So all these things that he's showed that has – made it a competition. And, when it's a competition, James Franklin's numbers haven't been good enough to, to just allow this guy, who they believe are even. And I think the reason why James was given the first shot after Ricky's unfortunate injury is because of the contract. I think without the contract, it might have been the way this sounds like to me. I bet you if it was out the contract, Bethel Thompson might have been the first guy to get in there, to be honest. So, this guy's – I was at practice, watched practice the last couple of days out there. 2 days ago I was out there, and he looked good. Bethel Thompson took all the first-team reps, or most of the first-team reps, and he stands tall in the pocket. He's aggressive. He's not – he doesn't seem like this is too much for him. He doesn't seem timid out there. He was letting it loose, him and Marcus Ball, a lot of trash talking going back and forth. Marcus Ball definitely was not taking it easy on him and trying to make him feel comfortable. He called him by every name he possibly called him and talking all sort of noise to him. So it was fun to watch. But, yeah, that's my take on this, James. And to I'm not a quarterback expert, and I haven't broken down the film of his reads and all that stuff, so I'm not going to sit here and say what he is or isn't doing, but the numbers are what they are, and his numbers and stats aren't good enough. So obviously, if Coach Trestman is making that decision, and Jim Pop, they're making that decision, that means that they're seeing things in that film to tell them they need to make a change at quarterback.
And let's face it, when we talk about numbers, what do we always go back to, Chez? What's that piece of advice?
Men lie, women lie.
Numbers don't.
Numbers don't.
Simple as that. That is one of the golden rules here at the Waggle. If you're new to the podcast, these are, you know what else we haven't used? We haven't used the phrase, I feel, this year, Chez, strike the band ability that you used to be a solid go-to back in the day. Kind of got away
that
from
it. Because you heard me use it today. That's why you threw it out there, huh?
I feel like I needed to hear it. I feel like I want to hear it. But
you
the
heard,
one thing
you heard it today, so you throw it out there now.
I was actually, you know what's funny? I was just thinking about it a couple of days ago. I was going for a run and I was like, strike the band ability. And I was
I take that back. You haven't heard that yet. I use it today.
No?
You'll hear it. I won't tell you where. It's a secret between me and you.
Okay.
Whoever else is listening. But if you tune into your local station or your national station, you will hear strike the band ability, I think, probably tomorrow. I use it. That's funny you said that. We have not used it, and it came out. I used it today. You'll hear it tomorrow. That's pretty funny. That's great minds think alike or whatever that is, something weird. We think on the same page because I haven't heard that for a while. But it came out today, and I was talking about the Argos receivers.
Oh, you pulled it off the shelf and dusted it off.
I dusted it off, and we were talking about the Argos receivers and the fact that they got some gamers, and they have a couple guys with – strike the band ability, but when you look across the league, I don't think they have as many guys with strike the band ability as other teams would.
Well,
would you
I look
agree?
At, I yeah no I'm with you which yeah. And the reason why I kind of wanted to bring up the strike the band ability is because the Argos opponents
That's
coming up on Thursday.
By the way, hey, C-ball, let's say that right now. That's me now. That's
we gotta
trademark.
Steal it. Yeah.
Trademark that. That's mine now.
I feel like we gotta make a t-shirt for that. Strike the band ability.
I got a question for you.
Or just strike the band. Yeah.
Let's throw a couple names out there.
Okay.
Who are in the strike the band? Who could be hashtag strike the band ability in the league?
On both sides of the football?
It's just strike the band ability is every time you touch the rock, You possibly could strike up the band because you got that juice in you.
Well, I certainly feel like Andrew Harris has got strike the band ability.
Interesting.
I like.
I'm going. My first pick is Chris Williams.
You know what? He's got to hang on to the ball a little more, but he's
but
got that certain.
No,
he's,
time out. Strike the band ability is a guy that has that juice that every time he touches the ball, it could be a house call. I don't think Andrew Harris has strike the band ability.
All right.
Andrew Harris, the best running back in this league, but he doesn't have strike the band ability. I'll tell you who had Terry Williams from Calgary.
Darrell Walker.
I think Darrell Walker has strike the band. Martise Jackson has strike the band ability.
Oh, Eric Rogers has got strike the band ability.
I don't know. Possibly. He's not a burner, but we could.
No.
Maybe throw him in there.
Okay. Maybe not a burner, but makes the big plays.
I'll give you one. Christian Jones from Saskatchewan, from the Riders. He's got strike the band ability.
Yes, he does.
He got that juice.
Deontay Spencer's got strike the band ability.
Great call. Yeah, definitely Spencer. Mm-hmm.
Do we still give S.J. Green strike the band ability?
No, S.J. Green doesn't have strike the band ability. Now, this doesn't take anything away. These guys – actually, you know what? I give it to him if he catches it like on the 55 or the 40 or something, he got strike the band ability. Mm-hmm. But I usually want to give the strike to Brandon Banks has strike the band ability. Jalen Saunders, Brandon Banks, those guys got it. You know, guys who can
– Duke Williams?
I wouldn't naturally think so, but – the way he's got an 80 or 75-yard touchdown, so I guess we got to give it to the big fella.
doing something right this year, exactly. He's got an 88-yard touchdown already.
Maybe Ricky Collins Jr. out in your neighborhood has striked the banner.
Yeah, he looks good. You had some big praise for him last week in terms of what you're seeing.
Looks nice.
To see him from that side. Yeah. Tell me this. Does Johnny Manziel have strike the band ability?
No way. No way. He's not that fast. He's athletic for a quarterback, but that's not saying much. Athletic for a quarterback is not saying much.
Okay, give a couple DBs or give some defense a love, yeah, because hey, let's face it, you're on the panel now because you're the voice of the defense. So, strike the band ability.
I'm trying to think who can roll, who can really go. Let's go with who are the DBs who can really well. Kadarius Ford can fly. Toronto, he's injured right now, but he can go. Who else can fly? It's hard to see. You don't necessarily want to see DBs flying. Oh, Richard Leonard could go. He could run in Hamilton. You don't really want to see DBs who could really run because that means they're in chase mode. who have I seen that's a – I mean, any of the boundary corners and boundary halfbacks, anyone who's lined up there could run. I mean, mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, that's just – it is what it is. Ed Gainey can run.
Ed Gainey can play.
Any of those guys. I mean, yeah, anybody lined up at a
Nick
boundary.
Does a healthy Nick Marshall give you strike the band ability?
I'm certain he can run. I don't know his 40 time, but if you're lined up in the boundary and you're playing man-to-man coverage, you have strike the band ability because you're running. You know why? Because you're running up against guys who have strike the band ability. So you better be able to run, or the band's gonna be struck on your behind. So yeah, you know what? How about this? Go ahead, hit us up on Twitter at David Sanchez at James Sabalski. Hit us on Twitter, and let us know if you think a guy on your team or yourself personally, or a guy you watch has strike the band ability, defense or offense. That means he's got the juice, the speed to take it to the house every time he touches the ball. Hit us up and let us know who that is. Just give us a name. Just send us a name. Strike the band. Hashtag strike the band ability. All one word. Strike the band ability and add us. And then we'll make a list. See, ball, what guys have strike the band ability. Oh,
Richard Leonard. Richard Leonard, I've really enjoyed watching this year as well.
We forgot Thigpen, too. For sure, Thigpen.
Yeah,
well. Yes.
Yeah. There we go. So strike the band ability. There you go. Got a big explosive. Explosive is the key of that. We touched on from an explosive standpoint, but the whole reason I wanted to bring this up is I look at Ottawa, and Ottawa's winning games, and we seem to, when we talk about the Red Blacks, we talk a lot about, you know, the way that this team, it's generally Trevor Harris, it's generally Greg Ellingson, it's Brad Sinopoli, but this team's getting it done by defense this year. I'm still trying to figure out the Red Blacks as a whole because offensively they still don't look in complete sync, but they're 4-2. Defensively, they're as good a looking team defensively, second only to the Calgary Stampeders. But offensively, it's still not really the strength, the band ability with this offense doesn't seem to really be clicking with. Even with Willie Powell and Spencer and Ellingson, Sinopoli, a lot of weapons, and even with Trevor Harris, it just doesn't seem to be. You know what I'm? Do you know what I'm saying there? I can't find the right word for
you're
it.
Being, on, you're on being a podcast. You're being nice. You're being
yeah.
You're being
I'm
real
just trying
nice.
To figure it out.
Boy, they didn't score a touchdown last game. If it wasn't for what's the young kicker's name? If it wasn't for the rookie kicker who had 7 field goals last week, they would. I don't know what would have happened, but yeah, no, it's. Lewis Ward is his name, but he had, I think he had 7 field goals or some of that nature. So, yeah, they're not putting the ball in the end zone, but they're playing some great defense. They're number 2 in the league, 21 points a game, tied with Winnipeg right now. They just held Hamilton to 15 points, which is, I mean, Hamilton has weapons and a good quarterback, a good offensive coordinator. They held them to 15 points. Like I said, 21 points per game right now. That's pretty good. They're tied. They're behind Calgary, who is on record pace, and Noel Thorpe. We got to give it to Noel Thorpe. I mean, he's come over from Montreal, taken over this defense along with Mark Nelson is still there as the linebackers coach, and they've got this group playing. So I mean, they're playing some football. There's no doubt about it. They're balling. They're keeping this team in games. It is is what it is.
Yeah, I mean, Lewis Ward's got what? He's got 95% his field goal accuracy. He's 20 of 21 that you're touching on there. But, just a couple of other nuggets to throw along. The BC Lions picking up the Lemonator, the Lemon Drops himself, Sean Lemon. You know, Ed Hervey is trying to bolster a pass rush that was sorely lacking last year. And trying to do it with veteran guys. I don't think it's long-term sustainable, but for the now, you've got Odell Willis in the fold. You've now added Sean Lemon, you know, Gabe Nafton in the mix. You know, you're trying to find ways to put a Band-Aid on, you know, try to, I guess, mask the injury and the absence of Solomon Elamimian as long as you can, who's out for at least another 4 weeks, I believe. So... that's a tough one, but you liked what Herdman offered trying to fill in, step into his place last week.
Very much so, very much so. And you know what? Word out of BC, you know, prior to Solly getting hurt was just how impressed they were with Jordan Herdman. And sometimes, you know, young draft pick, you guys are saying that you're kind of like, yeah, well, he's your draft pick. You're gonna say good things about him. He's a young guy. He's not gonna have to play. So you know, who cares? But They went out over and above to just say how impressive he was, and even saying, you know, might want to find a way to get him on the field, whether it's packages or different positions or whatever it was. But he was that impressive. So when he stepped in, I was kind of looking for him and say, okay, let's see. I was very impressed. I wouldn't be crazy and say he didn't miss a beat, because Solomon Elamimian is the Hall of Famer and one of the best middle linebackers ever to play in this league. Hands down, he's that good, and no hesitation in my voice to say that. So you're gonna miss him, but Jordan Herdman was impressive for sure.
Do you not? It's funny to think of the Herdman brothers had a great career at Simon Fraser, but their combines during CFL week in 2017, they had Clunkers. Do you remember the Clunkers
CFL week?
Mark CFL week. That's right.
You don't think I'm trying to get a free pair of jeans? You're crazy. And a jean jacket, a Canadian tuxedo. You're crazy.
That's what I'm talking about. You know, hey, look, we're only about a month away from September, so the temperature's about to turn down for all these heat waves that have been hitting across the country. But they had a clunker of a combine, and now you look, but you know, we sometimes put so much stock into what these guys do with their 40 times and their benches, and you know, we sometimes, I think, lose sight of the fact of what these guys can actually do on an actual game day. And Jordan Herdman looks like a nice little steal now for the Lions, where he, you know, the two of them ultimately slipped in the draft because their stock dropped as a result of a lackluster combine. But you know what? He looks like he can play. And
it's not testers. Some guys are just not testers. And there's positions in football where your numbers are your numbers, and if you don't test at a certain number, it's going to be really difficult for you to play at a high level. It is what it is. The film can only show so much. There's just certain positions. If you're a step slow, you're just not going to be able to play. And a middle linebacker, you know, 40 times matter because you've got to be able to get there, but there's so much more. There's so much more involved in that. So I just – that's the one – that's not the one position, but it's one of the positions where – the 40 time always matters, but it's one of the positions where I think it matters a little bit less.
You know, I will just say on a side note, it was my buddy Dollywall had brought this up at a little rant the other day, but we are into week 8 of the CFL season, and the Lions, they're in Calgary this weekend to take on the Stamps, who have been unbelievable this season. Shout out to John Huffnagel and Dave Dickinson, who just continue to impress with what they do with their personnel and put together just an absolute powerhouse. But the rant that my buddy Dollywall shared with me the other day was the fact that we are into week 8 and the Lions have had as many bye weeks as they've had home dates already, and we are into week 8 on the season. They've played 2 home games, and for a team that's trying to get some momentum in the marketplace again, I don't know how you do that.
I do.
When you're playing on the road and you've played, you've had 2 weeks off already this season, and you've had only two home games. You got ideas?
Oh, for sure I do. For sure. By the way, we did give shout out to Dickie and we gave shout out to Huff, but we always forget about Mark Killam. Mark Killam is one of the best special team coaches in this league for a long
great
time.
Great hair too. He's maybe the best great, hair in the CFL.
Good dude, great hair. He's a heck of a coach. He's a heck of a coach and well respected around the league. We don't give a lot of love to to the teamers, but I'll tell you what, Mark, everyone knows Mark Killam and respects what he does, and let's give a shout out. I think our first waggle shout out to Mark Killam, which is long overdue for what he does. And that Stampeders year in year out, one of the best special teams in the league. And you know what? When you talk about list of potential head coaches and guys who've been around and know this league, I think you'll find Mark Killam on some list just because of how long he's been around and the respect he has and knowledge for the game. I'm sure that Mark Killam's name is on some people's short list. But
Chez, it always just quickly at that, and you're from your own experience, it always takes somebody a different sort of energy and a different sort of from a coach standpoint to bring out the best in special teams, and there is an energy around Mark that that's very likable. He's a guy you kind of just want to be around, I think, as a player and such. So he's done a wonderful job in the last few years here with the Stamps. We got a special guest coming up.
No doubt. Bring him
your
out.
Your old teammate?
My old teammate. The man won me a Grey Cup and was the MOP of the 2011 season. That's none other, the man, the myth, the legend, Travis Lule, here to join us on the Waggle.
Do we sing him in?
You want to sing them, man?
Lule, 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 lule. Come on, Trad. Lule, lule.
Travis, how are you doing, my man? Thanks for joining us.
Of course. Always good to chat with you, too. I'm doing good. Doing good out here on the West Coast. Sunshine.
Are you feeling rejuvenated after a bye week there?
Yeah, I actually am. You know, it's always a chance to take a bit of a deep breath, mentally as much as it is physically. So I had a good few days at home with the family, with the girls. Did a little camping, a little water sliding and all that. So some fun summer stuff we don't always need to do. So it was good, but back to work.
Nice. Water slides. Now, okay, it sounds like camping, water slides. I'm guessing, if I can guess, Travis, Cultus Lake?
Ooh, I wish. Cultus Lake's on the to-do list for sure. No, we were down at Birch Bay, down just across the border.
Oh, nice.
So lots of Canadian visitors on the U.S. side of the border down in Birch Bay in the summertime.
It's impossible. See, you must know somebody down in Birch Bay, because for anybody that doesn't know what it's like to try to camp on the West Coast now, like, you have to book about like a year in advance to get a campground in like Northern Washington State or on the Southwest Coast of British Columbia. It's, man, you must know people. You clearly are a big deal here on the West Coast, and you're able to find a spot in Birch Bay like that. So props to you, Travis.
Well, I grew up in Oregon, so I have a Pacific Northwest resident card that gets me around this part.
T. Lou, you're coming in to your third start right now. You came back for two games. And for those who don't know, you're second in the CFL right now in yards a game at 325. You're number two in the league. How do you feel? Obviously, you were out for a long time, but it was almost seamless, you coming back. I know for you probably didn't feel that way, but the numbers would indicate differently.
I appreciate you saying that. I did feel more comfortable in the second start than the first start, which is obviously normal. But you know what? I'm at a stage in my career where I have some confidence that's built off of past experience, so I'm not just relying on stuff that's completely built up, right? I mean, playing against Winnipeg, I had less than 10 practices really under my belt, like legitimate practices, like getting team reps against the defense and things like that, right? So I just had the mindset coming in that, so there's going to be some rust, and that's okay. But I can draw on past experience and just you know, make sure I'm being really decisive with the football, you know, not taking unnecessary hits. So if I'm decisive and I'm wrong, you know, it's better than holding the ball to try to be right, right? So that was just kind of my mindset coming in. And, you know, and I told my guys around me, and they understood. Everybody, you know, pretty much everyone on the offensive side of the ball was with me a year ago when I got hurt. So everybody knew my situation coming back. And so, you know, just it's a testament to the guys around me kind of elevating their level of play and rallying for me and saying, listen, I'm going to need you guys to make some plays for me, and every ball might not be perfect and things like that. So, you know, the guys stepped up, and our offense has really, you know, kind of woken up in the last couple weeks. It's just, you know, so that's been a really, really positive sign for us. Obviously, it was disappointing to not be able to finish that game in Ottawa when we played a pretty good game for much of that game, but Ottawa made, you know, more plays. We had a few mistakes in the fourth quarter of that game that kept us from winning, but I don't, you know, I you know, our message has kind of been, listen, we did a lot of good things. Let's continue to build on so many of the good things as we work to minimize some of the mistakes and just keep growing as a football team.
You use the word decisive in your decision. That's it's funny because that's exactly how I describe you and your return. As I said, you look so you look decisive in your decisions, and as you know, for a defense, when you're aggressive and decisive, you put a lot of pressure on that defense. Was there something that you watched when you were injured and Jonathan was out there, and you saw in Jarius's offense, it looks like a completely different offense? Is there something that you saw personally that you wanted to kind of get more out of in the offense? Because it looks, you know, Jarius is a vertical guy, and you know, he knows the pass game well. It just seemed like when you came in there, you really are taking your shots. Is there something you thought about before getting in there?
Well, yeah, you know, I do. I mean, I've been in this league long enough to know, you know, like you want to be an offense that possesses the football. So you want to be able to, you know, continue to get first downs and stay on the field and give your team an opportunity to make plays. But, you know, if you need to, you know, score in 10 or 12 plays on every drive, it's just too easy to make one little slip up on a drive and have that drive end. And, you know, a lot of times defenses play to that. You know, they want to be able to keep the ball in front of them, and they're going to, you know, just bank on you either just missing a slant throw or batting down a ball on a second down, and all of a sudden you're off the field, right? And so so the flip side of that is, you know, when you do have opportunities to make some plays, you do want to be calculated, but you want to be able to get some throws down the field. And, you know, we did a little bit, probably more of that in the Ottawa game, but so much of that was just because we had good success on first down. We were in second and medium situations, which draws a bit more man coverage. DBs have to be, you know, wanting to jump a route to not give you – they don't want to give up an easy five. I mean, you could attest to that. You're not going to give up an easy 5 yards on second and five. So it gives you a chance to, you know, run by guys and get vertical. And so that's a big, big part of our offense. So obviously it works hand-in-hand between offensive execution and coordinator confidence. If you're on the field and giving yourself an opportunity to make more plays, I think that gives the play caller the confidence to take some more chances down the field and to find some opportunity to take chances. I mean, in that Ottawa game, a couple of the I can think of at least two off the top of my head down through those were not game plan things. Those were stuff we drew up on the sidelines from seeing on the iPads and what we're getting from their defense. So that's the type of stuff that you can do when you do get first downs and get on the field. So yeah, that was for me coming in. And I tell quarterbacks this all the time, and I got to practice what I preach when I'm on the field playing, right, is that I just genuinely believe that you're better off to be decisive than you are to try to be right, right? So it's generally of a fatal decision. Even if you're wrong, if you're really decisive about it, you commit to it, you put the ball where you need to on time, that's generally not going to kill you. If something pops or whatever, you see it on film, you can come back to it or dial something up. But that's just how I – that's just kind of how I approach the game. And so I want to, I try to bring that and, you know, kind of ooze a little bit of that confidence when I'm playing by getting the ball in my hands and frustrated in defensive line and all those things. So all those things kind of play together, but that's, I guess that's a glimpse into my mindset going into football games. Yeah,
very good.
Chez, that almost sounds like the Travis Lule equivalent of the Herm Edwards, put your name on it. You're committing to it, right? That's almost one way
like
to kind
it.
Of look at
it.
Yeah,
like it.
I like it. No,
well,
no, you're
the guy
committed
you
want to
play
it.
For me, that's the guy I want to play with. And, we talked about I play with Travis. He's the guy you want to play with. But you want your quarterbacks and to have confidence in what they do. And own it, and own it and know that, hey,
you're going to go down. If you go down, you're going down swinging versus someone that's timid. And you know, I think Travis is his point of being decisive and better to be wrong and decisive. And that's all right. I mean, but yeah, I like it.
Yeah.
If I got to put my stamp on that, I'm okay with giving that as a stamp. It's one of the things that I live by. So yeah, I'm gonna try to keep that mindset going forward.
So let me throw this at you. I mean, here you are, you're back in the saddle again, and as Davis just alluded to a few moments ago, you know, this is your third straight start coming up this weekend. It's a tall test against Calgary, but I mean, just to even be here for you in 2018, starting again, what does this mean, and what's this like this time around for you?
You know, to be honest, it's pretty wild when I stop and think about just where I was at. I mean, I'm speaking with you, gentlemen, and, you know, I gave you a Grey Cup leak, you know, not knowing exactly what I was going to do with my next step, right? And so, you know, I'm glad now in hindsight that I did. I kind of approached it the way I did. Like I said, listen, I'm not going to make any decisions yet. I got to kind of be emotionally further removed from, you know, having been playing and then gotten injured last year, right? That's obviously, as a competitor, that's, you know, it's a heartbreaking thing. And Davis has lived through it, and lots of guys have, but to be, you know, to be playing football, or, you know, playing good football and then being hurt and all those things, particularly later in your career, you question all those types of things. So, yeah, I mean, I you know, once I got into the spring, I knew I wanted to give it another go. Again, there's no guarantees. As I got to training camp, you know, I wasn't ready. I was still a bit limited in training camp, but it was getting better, and it was showing signs that I was turning the corner. You know, so I just kind of had tunnel vision. I said, I'm just going to focus on what I can control right now. What I can control is how I'm going about my rehab, how I'm progressing, how I'm moving forward. And so I really didn't have, you know, this plan or this vision of what it would look like on the other side. So, you know, to kind of blink your eyes and here we are, you know, in week six, and, you know, I've been playing for a couple of weeks now, and we're heading to Calgary, and, you know, like you say, back in the saddle. I wouldn't have necessarily expected that, but I've learned in this business that, you know, you got to prepare for all those different scenarios. And so kind of removing myself, I guess, like I said, from that and going, listen, I'm just going to get healthy and, you know, kind of let the chips fall where they may, if and when I get healthy. And so it just so happened for me, you know, it was the time that the club needed me. I kind of was getting the tap on the shoulder right as I was getting healthy. I mean, literally, if I had been asked to start the week before, I don't know that I'd have been confident to say yes. And but I had progressed to the point where it would look like I was going to probably be the two that week. And in my mind, to be the two, you have to be ready to shoulder the load. And that was when they kind of said, you know, well, you think you can start even with a handful of reps? I said, yeah, you know, I'm willing to step into that role. And so, yeah, so here we are. And so what does it mean to me? I think, you know, for me, I genuinely appreciate the opportunity to be on the field, right? It's like a bonus for me. Like, I had to commit to loving the process of playing, right? And so, you know, those are the questions I had to ask myself. If I get healthy, I may not be back on the field right away, or if or when. I don't know how that would look. So do you still love going to work every day if you're you're the two? And I could genuinely answer yes. I love being around the guys. I still love learning and competing at the game. I like all those things. So the game, being able to prep and play in the games, is really like icing on the cake for me. It's a huge bonus. So I don't take it for granted at all. I genuinely enjoy it. I try to keep smiling all week. I try to take a little pressure off myself by, you know, knowing that I'm not up there by myself. I'm just going to rely heavy on my teammates. And, you know, so that's just kind of mentally where I'm at. So I want to, you know, I want to play decisive, play confident, and enjoy it. And so far, so good. And, you know, nothing's more fun in football than winning. So obviously that's what you work like crazy to do.
Now, you've been a young quarterback before, and conversely, look on the other side, your teammate, Jonathan Jennings, here he is back to holding a clipboard again. What's that dynamic like? And what do you say to a guy like Jonathan?
Yeah, I mean, the biggest thing is Jonathan's one of my best friends, right? And so we have a working relationship. We've, you know, this is our fourth year together, and just in that amount of time, we've been through a number of things. Both of us have been injured at times, you know, been in and out of the roster. So there really is, there's really nothing that could happen between Jonathan and myself that would, you know, jeopardize any of that, would make that awkward or anything. We talk openly and honestly whether the play is good or bad by either one of us. We talk directly about it, and that's just kind of how we want the quarterback room to go about its business. So, you know, obviously Jonathan knows I support him 100%. I know he's a good football player. And, you know, if he's in a little
little bit of a funk or a stage of his career where, you know, it's, you're not getting the result that you want or deserve based on the work you put in, that's perfectly normal. I mean, little perspective, I had zero passing yards when I was Jonathan Jennings' age in the CFL. So he's still got a lot of good football in front of him. I've seen his instinct. You know, so he just knows I continue to support him. He supports me like crazy when I'm on the field playing, and that's how, you know, we make the quarterback position the best you can be for our club.
I made a comment earlier. You know, we talked about it earlier on the show, and that was Vernon Adams Jr. I'm going to ask you about two other quarterbacks in the league. And you know, obviously you're not going to talk too much about other guys and how they handle situations, but more from your perspective, Travis, and you know, how you would handle these situations and what you see as a young guy in this. And the one was Vernon, first of all, and he, you know, Vernon was upset by, and I was at the game, and there was fans chanting Johnny's name, and you know, we all know the hype machine that Johnny is, which is not Johnny's fault necessarily, but there's been a lot, and that can get taxing because he was also in Hamilton with him. But he blasted back at the crowd and the fans, and he later apologized for it. What would your, as a quarterback, if you were out there in his situation, and he was playing his butt off too. I was, like I said, I was at the game. He was playing his butt off. And, you know, fans were chanting for a guy that's been there for 3 days. How would you feel, or how would you handle that situation, Trav?
Yeah, I mean, obviously that is tough. It is, particularly in your home stadium, to maybe not feel as supported. I mean, when you hear your home crowd booing your offense, it is tough. I would say this, you know, in his unique situation, as you mentioned with the Johnny Manziel and all the hype surrounding that, I would have borderline expected some of that, you know, like I knew this is a kind of a weird situation. It was almost as though, you know, Vernon was a stopgap between, you know, Drew Willey and Schultz and those guys that kind of been banged up or whatnot. So you're going to play, but you know that Johnny's going to be playing shortly. So, you know, my mindset going into that game, man, I got nothing to lose. I know that, you know, I know they want the other guy to play shortly. I want to come out here and, you know, and put it on tape. And I thought Vernon did some of that. I thought he did inject a little bit of life into that team. And yeah, he made a few mistakes and he hadn't played in a while and all those things. It's kind of normal, but, you know, I thought his response was just kind of, and he said it as much, but just kind of an emotional initial response. Go, man, I'm out here fighting my tail off. My home crowd is, you know, chanting for the other guy. I mean, that is tough. Part of playing professional quarterback is living through tough moments. And I think, you know, ultimately that'll make him a little bit mentally tougher down the road, even though maybe it feels a little unfair or what have you in the moment. You know, but if you can stand out there in a stadium and chant somebody else's name on the sideline, and live through that moment, I think, you know, you go, man, it's not going to, it didn't kill me. And then the next time you go out and you get booed after a two and out, you go, well, at least they're not chanting the other guy's name like I've lived through before, right? So it's just another life experience and opportunity to grow as a person and player. And the hope would be that, you know, Johnny and Vernon, having known each other from Hamilton, there's no ill will or anything weird between the two of them, so it doesn't actually become an issue. But, you know, that's just another hurdle, a little chunk of adversity for learning how to become a good pro.
I got one more for you, and that was, there was a special on TSN that Dave Naylor did about James Franklin, and the fact that James has, this was before the demotion, it doesn't make a difference, but he talked about James, and James flat out said that he likes football, but he doesn't love football. Football doesn't define him, and we talked about it at length on the panel. Me and Milt Stiegel went back and forth about, Milt thought it was okay because he smiles all the time, and James says he's never going to take that smile off his face, that whether win or lose, that's how he is in the locker room, and that's how he's going to be because football doesn't define him. Have you ever seen a quarterback or another guy who – even when losing, you can still have a smiley personality or whatever it may be. And do you think that might rub your teammates wrong? I'm not talking about James in particular, but do you think in general, Travis, that could rub some of your guys the wrong way, the fact that you might not care? Because that was my argument, that I get that football doesn't define James, and that's fair. And I respect him for that a lot, actually. I think there needs to be more guys like him in that situation. That realizes better, bigger things, pardon me, than football and life. But the fact that he I think that could be disruptive to a team and would bother some teammates. What's your take on that?
Well, I would say I don't entirely disagree with you. I would say it completely depends on the individual, right? Like if these guys are in the locker room with, you know, and again, just to speak on this situation, but if James is there doing his thing every day, they know how he works, they know he competes like crazy, and you have the trust of your guys, then yeah, I think that could be okay. It's if, you know, maybe some of the defensive guys, you haven't developed a relationship or whatever, and you know, the offense is underperforming and you're on the sideline smiling, I think, yeah, that could be a little bit disruptive. Now, I'm not saying that's the case. I have no idea. I don't know what the vibe is in that locker room, but just speaking in generalities, you know, I haven't been, you asked, I thought that was a good way of phrasing, but you asked if I'd been around one, like, cause I, you know, my initial reaction is to say, I think you can do that. I think you can be, you know, emotionally, whatever, flat or even keeled or like in that, you know, but always smiling, good or bad or otherwise, and get away with it. But I don't know that I've necessarily played with exactly that. You know, I'd like to think that I'm a pretty emotionally even keeled guy, right? I'm going to stand up in front of the media. If I've had a bad game or we had a tough loss, I can stand up, you know, in front of the media for my guys and not just be completely downtrodden. Now, obviously you're going to hear some disappointment in my voice and things like that. So that's just my own personal, approach and way about it. But, so I guess the short answer is, yeah, you can do it, but it really does depend on the individual. If the guys around you, if you have other ways of showing and proving that you are definitely committed. And frankly, I don't like when guys, quote, put on a front, right? If you're acting mad when you're losing just to do it,
yes.
Front, so I don't
yes.
like that.
Yes.
You want it to be natural emotion, right? So, you know, if he's
great
again, like
point. That's a great point, and we see that. Yeah. You can see that. I've seen it many a times where guys, you've seen it too, right? Guys were acting like they're mad, trying to show out in front of the team or in front of the coaches that they're so upset. But really, you can see deep down maybe. And Travis, tell me this one. And I saw a guy do it 2 seasons ago. Me and James talked about it. No names, no blame. But he had a great game. And it was his first time he had a great game all season. And he came in the locker room and tore up the locker room. Tore the media. This is terrible. The team is. But you could sense that the reason was that he really felt good about his game. So he felt like he wanted to show how much he cared anyway. It was really interesting.
Yeah.
But we as players can see through that really easily.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I guess to that end, yeah, I'd say if a guy is just smiling and you know, if they genuinely can feel like, oh no, I'm really competing and I care a lot, but I'm just smiling. If guys know that about you, like that, generally you can feel that out. If say, okay, that's the way it is, and I can respect that because I know he's competing and I know he cares a lot about us and he wants to win, then I think you can get away with that. But like you said, it's, you know, yeah, you know, it's just human relationships, right? Like you have a way of kind of seeing through people and getting to know people, and you know, and guys are different. Everybody's different. There's been feisty guys doing it, and Ricky Ray hardly had a fist bump in his, you know, in his greatest Grey Cup performance, right? And so guys do it differently. But I think as long as you're just genuine and authentic to who you are, yeah, you can pull off different emotional styles.
Take us to one last one before we go here. Take us to Calgary. I mean, this can't be an easy task. This team, as you know, is on pace. I have the best defense. If they keep up this pace, under 10 points a game, the best defense in CFL history. They're on pace for it at least. What do you, and obviously you're not going to give us your game plan, but what do you think has, has elevated them to this status? We know about, you know, the obvious stuff, they're getting pass rush, they cover, all they tackle, all the obvious things, but is there something that's made this defense special that you've seen on film? Because I know you're a film junkie.
Yeah, you know, I think just speaking to their defense, they play really good collective team football. I mean, I know it sounds cliche, but I mean, Davis, when you cut on the film, right, you see guys running to the football. You see, you know, you see guys rallying around other guys, you know, linebacker crew celebrating with the DBs when they make a play, or whoever, DBs getting excited about a defensive lineman making a play. Like, you can just tell they play really together as a group. And I think the thing that's made Calgary so tough over the last couple of years, they just have an expectation of that success. So
you know, if you just cut a handful of individual plays away, you go, I mean, who are they any different than any other defense, right? But it's just, it's a level of consistency that you see week in and week out. And it's an expectation, right? They truly believe they're going to shut the opposing offense down. And I think, I really think that goes a long way in the sport of football and sport in general. And, you know, in the psychology of sport, if you believe, like if I envision every play, if I walk up and I think every play has a good chance to succeed, it's amazing how many more of those plays succeed than if I'm, you know, if I'm in a state of mind where I'm going, man, I hope they don't do this or I hope they don't do that because they can really shut us down. If you take that approach the other way, and I think that kind of comes out on Cowboys film, is they just genuinely think they're going to stop you, whether they're right or wrong, they think they are. And, you know, it is a team game, right? So they play excellent field position football. Rarely, and when you watch a film, rarely are you just, you're just watching any game film. Rarely is it a short field that the opposing offense gets, right? They play good enough on offense. They get a couple first downs, getting you deep, rely on that defense. The defense wants you to make a mistake or two along the way. And Calgary plays really opportunistic football as a team. So you just have to be really disciplined. You have to take advantage of when you do get opportunities, when you do get a short field. You have to find a way to put points on the board. They capitalize on your mistakes. Obviously, you say that every single week, but Calgary is really good at that, just turning turnovers into points on the other side of the ball. So you just have to play really sound football. Like, in Calgary rarely beats themselves, right? In any phase of the game, they rarely beat themselves. So they don't give up easy chunk plays. They don't take a lot of penalties in tough situations and critical moments of football games. They make the opposing team earn it. So you can beat them. You just got to put a good three phases of football together to beat them.
Travis, I mean, you listened and you talked about how you had to decide whether you still had the passion and the love for the game, whether you wanted to do it again in 2018. You just talked a half hour of football, and to hear the energy in your voice, man, I think every CFL fan listening right now says, you know, it's still there. You've shown that you still got lots of game left. Congratulations. Even to get to this point, I think you've defied a lot of odds, and I know you don't want this journey to be over yet, so... thanks for hanging out with us, and thanks for tolerating all of Davis for so many years, and even now here in this podcast form after all this time.
Travis, one of my favorite teammates. Only got a chance to play with him for two seasons, but I will say this unequivocally: one of the best leaders I've ever been around. It's because you're genuine and you're real and you're a good teammate, Travis, and other than that, you're the number two passer in the league right now behind Mike Riley, so you can sling that rock a little bit too. So congratulations, good luck this week against Calgary, and look forward to talking a lot more with you when you retire and get that media gig, and we can work together somewhere, all right?
Travis Lule joining us this week here on The Waggle.